come ashore?
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
Hello to you once again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. I'm Mark Suddeth, your host. Good of you to join in and take a listen as we continue our journey back in time, looking back at the year 2006 and the evolution of this project as a whole. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to continue that journey, but I'm going to kind of pull back a little bit and sort of reassess, take a look at where everything is up to this point in August of 06, because something pivotal is going to happen that year, that August, that will kind of shape things to come over the next several years from 06 on through about 2008. And that's where this season of the podcast is going to take us. We're going to go through 06, and we're getting through a good chunk of it now through these first few episodes. And then we're going to take a look at 2007. And then finally 2008, which was a very impactful, big hurricane season. Lots of stuff to talk about regarding that year. And of course, it was also a huge year for the United States as a whole, with the economy collapsing starting in 07 into 08, and the presidential change, etc. You know, the politics of everything got involved. And then we had all these big hurricanes in 2008. One of them, Ike, kind of seems to be forgotten, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that later. But again, in this episode, I want to just kind of take a look at where things are. So we know, moving along in this new era, starting in 05, the year prior, we started doing live streaming video. That has been established. We can do it from the vehicle, which at this point in time was the Chevy Tahoe, the Hurricane Track Chevy Tahoe. We can stream live with audio using a video camera and a laptop that was all mounted in the Tahoe kind of semi-permanently, and that worked really, really well. We started that in the spring of 05 with some testing, and by the time we got through that historic 2005 season, we got pretty darn good at it. And these feeds were used through our Hurricane LiveNet site that we had set up as a sister or companion site to HurricaneTrack.com. And different news media were able to tap in, and it was new. So some of them had trouble figuring it out, but CNN did, and a few others as well. I think MSNBC did a piece. Nothing really with the Weather Channel yet. We're going to get to that several years down the road. We'll get there. But CNN was able to get into it a little bit, and sorry, my phone beeping at me. I've got it muted now. CNN was able to tap into it in the 05 season. And that's where we're going to go in this episode. I'll talk about that in a moment. So we got the live video coming from the vehicle. We've also got these remote cams. You know, we had some setbacks in 05, but we recovered from that. Got all the camera systems replaced that we lost in Katrina. And, you know, we're in the 06 season anticipating a big year. And it was anything but, you know, the season was pretty lackluster. We had Alberto. And I don't even, you know, reflecting back, I know I talked about that in a previous episode. I don't think I deployed anything for Alberto, come to think of it. And then we had Ernesto, and we really didn't have to deploy anything to speak of for Ernesto either, that I talked about in the last episode. So I've got all this equipment, you know, I say all of it. It was three camera units back then. They were big, bulky, heavy, expensive, complicated, but we had three. In these storm case boxes, as they're called. We had three of them, and I wanted to kind of expand their use and start working with some national media. Now, since my friend, Jeff Flock, who worked for CNN since its beginning, and we had Jeff on in a prior episode, many episodes ago, as a guest, talking about that. So Jeff was a good friend of mine. He kept in touch with me even when he retired from CNN after many years there. We stayed in touch. He got me in touch with some of the right people. And so as we get to the end of August, around the time just before Ernesto, Jesse and I stopped in at the CNN headquarters in Atlanta because between Jeff, my good friend Jeff Flock, and this producer that I knew in college, her name was Amanda. I don't remember her last name. That escapes me. But she was in like media and communications at UNC Wilmington. And I, of course, was studying geography, weather, climate, hurricanes. And somehow she knew about me. I don't remember how. And she wanted to do sort of a test video, sort of like news report as part of her college work with me. And so she knew who I was. She went on to graduate about the same time I did in 1995. She went on to work for the local TV station here in Wilmington, WECT. And then as the years went by, you know, it's now going to be 10 years later, 2005, both of us 10 years down the road in our careers, she goes to work for the Turner Broadcasting Company, or, you know, more specifically, CNN. So she works at CNN headquarters in Atlanta and happens to see me during Hurricane Rita. It was just one of those serendipitous, amazing coincidences, what a small world, that this Amanda person knew me from UNC Wilmington when I was on Darren Kagan's show during Hurricane Rita. You following all this, hopefully? So, I knew Amanda, I knew Jeff. Both of them worked to get an appointment for Jesse and me to go into CNN at the end of August and have a meeting that would change the course of, I won't say everything, but it was certainly a big deal and a big change for things to come. Okay, so here we are again up into late August of 2006, and I have been invited to meet some officials, some people higher up in the food chain, if you will, at CNN headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. The CNN Center, as it's called, is pretty impressive, I have to say. And, you know, putting aside any opinions about CNN and their politics and how they do things now, yes, even in 06, there was, you know, considerable polarizing opinions between CNN and Fox News, but I was there because of the weather. And as long as you leave politics out of the weather, it can be very objective, because we all know there's a lot of opinions when it comes to the weather. That is for sure. And I've always stayed objective, and I focus on the science, and the weather is what it is. So that's what I was there for. And the CNN Center was amazing. I mean, this was it. This was built for, you know, this building. I don't remember what it was before it became CNN. I know Ted Turner took over some office space in this area of Atlanta, downtown Atlanta, and transformed this particular property into the CNN Center. And it was amazing. You walk in, there's security right as you walk in, big giant red CNN logo at the front. And we were able to actually park the Tahoe over on the parking deck across the street from the CNN Center. And then we walked in, Jesse and I did. You check in at security. And inside of there, before we get into the meeting, etc., there's a big atrium or whatever you call it. It looks like an embassy suites, you know, where there's this huge open area that goes all the way up to the ceiling. I think it's, I don't know, 10 stories tall. And it's wide open. There's like a food court in there. Almost like a mall, honestly. And there's gift shops. And, you know, CNN was part of the Turner network of news channels between CNN International and CNN Headline News, Cartoon Network, TBS, Turner Classic Movies, you name it. And that was all highlighted there. Quite an impressive place. And they do behind-the-scenes tours. You could pay and get in line and go on a behind-the-scenes tour of CNN Center. Now, Jesse and I were lucky enough to be invited and escorted in by this woman, Amanda, and I hate the fact that I can't remember what her last name was back then. I mean, maybe she's married now, I don't know. And I did some digging, and I just couldn't figure it out, but we'll call her Amanda, and that'll suffice. So Amanda lets us in. we get these little pictures taken of us, these paper printout things, you know, you got to show your ID, and it's got an armed security guard there, and you go in these twin escalators, and you go up into the offices of CNN headquarters. And I mean, this was the place. This was it. This is where Anderson Cooper, well, he's in New York, but he would come down to Atlanta from time to time. Miles O'Brien was there. All the early days CNN people, most of them were still there. Chuck Roberts, Darren Kagan was in Atlanta. Just different personalities. Reynolds Wolf, I think, was already there. He might have still been in college. I'd have to look it up, honestly. But I know Reynolds Wolf eventually was at CNN. We get to actually meet with him in 2008. We'll get to that. Jackie Jarrus was there. She's now at the Weather Channel, as is Reynolds Wolf, just for jumping ahead a little bit. But anyway, these are, you know, CNN was this icon. Again, I hate the fact that we have to even sort of discuss the elephant in the room, that there is, you know, sort of this divide, and some people completely detest CNN, some people love it. You know, again, all of that, let's bury it and just look at it from the factual point of view that it is a media icon in American history. And as far as broadcast media goes, it was the first 24-hour news channel, and their weather department did a pretty good job. And again, that's what I was there for. I don't do politics. You know, I'm not qualified for it. Believe me, I would get crushed if I even tried. So there we were, Jesse, myself, Amanda, and we met with this gentleman, a weather producer named Dave Hennen. And he and Amanda, myself, Jesse, all talked. We probably met with a couple of other people. I can't remember off the top of my head. We went to a meeting room, a conference room, brought my laptop, showed them some examples of the very limited amount of video that these remote cams had captured to date. And I guess I should make it very clear, probably should have done this from the get-go, that that is why we were basically there, is to talk about using these remote cams and having them on CNN for future weather events. Now, we tried a relationship with the Weather Channel in 05. And you think that that would have happened, you know, you would have think that or thought that that would have happened. And we tried, and just not enough people, as they say, got it, you know, and we never had a formal agreement. So I kind of stayed this free agent, if you will, not signed with anybody in particular. But I was shopping, if you will. I was trying to, hey, let's see if we can take this to a major television network. The Weather Channel didn't seem to find enough value in it just yet, and it was new and not tried before. Nobody had remote cams. I was it. I mean, that's a fact. And, you know, this was something that had to be proven. And as we know now, many years later, I've done just that, thanks to an army of great people supporting this project. But you got to start somewhere. And that's this origin story here of when we finally got to start working with the big media companies. And it started with CNN in late August of 2006. So we had this meeting. It probably wasn't more than an hour. As you know, I can certainly talk, and I love to talk up what I do, especially when it is successful. I get very excited, very passionate about what I'm doing, what my visions are, you know, trying to paint scenarios of where we could use things in future weather events, not just hurricanes, but covering winter storms, immersing you in the activity that's out there, whatever the impacts are, with hurricanes being the main event, the Super Bowl, if you will, of weather. And they liked it. You know, they were kind of interested in it and said, you know, we could see what we can do maybe for the rest of the 06 season. And that was pretty much it. You know, we had this introductory meeting, got my foot in the door, and, you know, thought, all right, we'll see what happens. And of course, we had Ernesto later, just a few days later, within a week. And I don't think I set anything up for that. Like I said earlier, I know I didn't in Florida. Ernesto, as we talked about in the previous episode, had potential of being a major event. And I'm sure that I had some emails back and forth with Dave at CNN, Dave Hennen. And by the way, get to know that name. Remember that name, Dave Hennen, because it's going to get mentioned a lot. But nothing happened. You know, there was, you know, Ernesto was just not that big of a deal. We didn't deploy any of the remote cams, any of the three that we had. And so that was kind of it. You know, foot in the door. We know some people. Let's see what happens. And so the rest of 06, in terms of the hurricanes, was kind of a non-event for the United States. We had Alberto, which was a tropical storm. We had Ernesto, which made landfall as a strong tropical storm, again, as we talked about in the last episode. But that's it. We're done. And so we leave the summer, and now we're heading into the fall. And what am I going to do next? You know, kind of twiddling my thumbs a little bit. I hate being bored when it comes to career stuff. You know, I've got a great family. We do stuff together. There certainly is that. But I don't like sitting around being idle. I like to create things. I want to do documentaries of my work. You know, we didn't have social media and we didn't have podcasting like we do now. Nothing to the scope of what we've got now back in 06. And geez, the 06 hurricane season, I had Alberto and Ernesto and that was it. What am I going to do? Tracking the hurricanes 2006? There wasn't any. You know, I did two DVD productions, full-length movies, Tracking the Hurricanes 2004, Tracking the Hurricanes 2005, both well-received from the audience that I had. Nothing from 06, so darn, you know, it was kind of boring. Luckily, through a friend of mine, and I've mentioned this gentleman before, I can't remember specifically when, but I know he's come up this name in previous episodes here, Lou Fincher, who had a company called Hurricane Consulting Incorporated. I believe he still has that company even today down in Friendswood, Texas. He had arranged or gotten my name to the proper people. I don't know how these things work. You know, somebody knows somebody, they network, and voila, you get an invitation. So that invitation through Lou was for me to come speak at United Space Alliance, USA. And that was a contractor that did a whole lot of work for NASA. So I was going to get to fly to Texas in October of 06 and actually speak about hurricanes in front of a bunch of rocket scientists. Well, despite the fanfare of 06 being a very big season again, it didn't live up to that, and that was a good thing. We ended up with 10 named storms, and that pretty much ended on October 2nd, the last storm, Isaac. Actually, it was a hurricane. It finished up its lifespan on October 2nd, and it's interesting because most of the hurricane activity, except for Ernesto, which was a hurricane very, very briefly near Haiti, everything else was out over the central Atlantic, maybe near Bermuda and then points east. And in fact, the two major hurricanes that year were out over the central Atlantic, nowhere near land at all. And those two majors were Gordon and Helene in mid to late September, and everything stayed well east of the United States. So the hurricane season ended up being very slow in terms of impacts for the U.S. and coming off of the incredibly tumultuous, deadly, damaging, and just highly impactful 05 season. That was a welcome change. And as I said before we got into the last musical interlude there between segments, that left me with a lot of spare time, and I don't like being bored. And like I said, I was not going to be able to, you know, do a Tracking the Hurricanes 2006, because what the heck was it going to be, you know? Like Alberto, Ernesto, a little bit about the hurricane fairs I did with Lowe's. It'd be like 15 minutes long, and yeah, that's not happening. So no production for 06. There was just no content, really. And so I got really lucky, again, emphasizing that I don't like being bored. and just not having stuff related to my work to do. I'm not a workaholic, you know. I take time to do stuff with my family, certainly, and with many young children at this point in my life. In 06, there was plenty to do there, but I like staying busy within what I do for my work. I like creating and thinking about the next play, as I call it. And so I was very fortunate to be invited to come and at least do a talk there in October. Again, it was orchestrated by my friend Lou Fincher, who was one of the co-owners. He and his wife own Hurricane Consulting, Inc. in Friendswood, Texas. And he knew some people that over at NASA. Lou knows a lot of people. And he knew some people at NASA, and they knew some people at USA. What is USA? United Space Alliance. This is a company that does like space flight operations. They did this from 95 till about 2019. And then, unfortunately, for whatever reason, they ceased operations in 2019. But they were very much in full force in 06, and they needed a hurricane expert. So Lou recommended me. That was quite an honor. They paid my way, paid me a small fee to come speak to, I don't know, a few dozen people out on the campus there, somewhere on the NASA campus, as I call it. It might have been Johnson Space Center somewhere. Sort of these nondescript government buildings where three or four of them, like you'll literally have, you know, building A, building B, building C, building D, and they all look the same, whatever. And if you know the NASA culture, that can, you know, be the case. Just everything's plain, exciting, but still rather plain. So I flew out there. It was kind of chilly. I remember that. It was early October of 06, and I rented a car from Bush Airport there, IAH, as they call it, the airport identifier. Went out to dinner with Lou that evening. I think we got like Tex-Mex or something. I didn't like it. It didn't sit well with me. Gave it a shot, but it just wasn't my cup of tea, as they say. And I got a good night's sleep. Slept over at the Days Inn there. I do remember that detail. Again, how? I don't know. I just do. And it was over in the Webster area, the NASA area of eastern Houston. If you know the region, you know what I'm talking about. And it's such a neat part of Houston. Very modern and cosmopolitan looking. You got Clear Lake over there. And just the NASA Webster area is just really, and it's just got history. You know, Johnson Space Center is over there, and the United Space Alliance being part of that, so forth and so on. The culture, the icons you could see of different NASA, whatever, you know, streets labeled as such. It was just cool. It really was, and quite an honor. So what did I do? I did a PowerPoint. Typically, I talk about, you know, hurricane impacts first, the hazards, getting to know hurricanes from the inside out, you know, to get everybody on the same page. What are we talking about here? Then we get into, you know, sort of the impacts in terms of the visualizations. You know, my career at this point was about 10 years old, and I had, you know, a handful of hurricanes under my belt, quite a bit of video, a lot of pictures, a lot of experiences, and I shared those with this group made up of engineers, space flight coordinator people, whatever. Some rocket scientists were in there, I'm sure. Very, very smart people, very dedicated people, very by the book people. And of course, with NASA and anything related to space flight, there's a lot of planning, a lot of contingency stuff to take into consideration. And they wanted to be hurricane prepared. So they brought me in and I did my thing. And a big part of it was being able to show these really amazing CGI, you know, computer-generated images that I had created using my old Mac there that I had, this Power Mac G3. I've talked about this a little bit before, that I had the ability, and this is where I won an award back in 1999, where I could take a photograph and digitally add water, you know, using computer-generated imagery in a program called Bryce, B-R-Y-C-E. You would basically map an image to a 3D cube, and then using the camera technology in this program, you would zoom in on that cube so it fills the frame. And in the old days, it was a 4x3 frame instead of the widescreen 16x9. I think you could render it out even as big as an IMAX frame, honestly, but whatever. And so that's what I would do. I could take these photographs of any property and digitally add what's called an infinite plane of water. And the water would have its own properties of reflectivity, particulate matter in it, whatever. And I did that going back to 1999, and I won an award for that innovative work to help visualize storm surge impacts. You know, we got away from cartoon graphics from the early days, which are in most government brochures up to this point. And they are, they're like little cartoon paintings or whatever, and they're not bad, but, you know, we're in the age of modern computers in 1999 and beyond, and look at where we are today. You can do this on your Apple Watch, for goodness sakes, and a three-year-old could do it literally today. Look at what we do with augmented reality, AR. But anyway, I digress. So I showed these pictures that I had done of Katrina and the aftermath in Waveland and Bay St. Louis because we had watermarks on these properties and even over to Biloxi. You know, I took these photographs and you could see these high watermarks where there was debris or an actual line on structures or inside of structures. And then I went and added the water myself digitally in this Mac program. And I showed that, and boy, the gasps that, you know, went around the room, you know, you could hear people's jaws hitting the floor. Their mouths were agape, as they say, you know, that, wow, this was a way to visualize what we knew happened from the actual data. Those were the high water marks, 85 inches inside this house, you know, 12 feet up on this bridge or overpass or whatever, some cases 20 plus feet. And very little video evidence was taken when Katrina happened for obvious reasons. So I was able to digitally add the water and it looked about as real could get. You know, and that was really neat to be able to drive the point home of understanding these impacts using a combination of real world examples, time lapses, and various videos that I had taken in my short career to this point. It was 10 years long, you know, fairly short. I guess about half of where I am now. I'm about 25 years into it now. So not quite halfway through in 2006, but still only a handful of hurricane impacts that I had, you know, been able to study up close and personal compared to what would be happening over the next 15 years, right? So I had a limited library, but a library nonetheless, an archive of what I could show. Wind impacts, flooding impacts, wind and surge combined, whatever. And so that's what I did. That was the crux of my talk, you know, showing observational elements of the work that I do and did. And it was very well received. People appreciated it. I talked for about an hour. We did a Q&A session of another 15 to 20 minutes. And again, just being able to shake hands with scientists that worked for this contractor that works for NASA, that works with NASA. They're putting people, you know, into space. The space shuttle program was getting ready to wrap up. Of course, we know how that was going to turn out. You know, the shuttle fleet, the lifespan was coming to an end. Still, getting to meet these people was an amazing honor. And I was very happy that Lou had arranged it. And I wrapped it up. It was a one-day seminar and, you know, a few hours, whatever it was. And I flew home. And now it was time to tackle one more important thing for the year 2006, and then we would wrap it up in a neat package, put it on the shelf, and archive it. That's it. 06 would be done, and I'll cover that in the last block coming up here after the musical break. All right, so we all remember that I'm working with Lowe's since 2001 at this point in time. So this would be the sixth, it's hard to say that, S-I-X-T-H, this would be the sixth year that I would be working with Lowe's. 01 through 06, six inclusive years, and each year I had a budget. The very first year, that budget was about $40,000 for my projects. And by year six, that was up to about $85,000. A lot of travel, and you know, my salary went up. That was not my salary. I'll make that very clear. And I don't mind talking about it. This is all part of these details that I enjoy being able to give you insight about. And, you know, this is a very personal thing. You know, this is an entrepreneur at work, and you have to be able to feed your family, right? And pay your bills. So yes, part of that $85,000 budget was my salary. The rest was for travel. All these hurricane fairs that I would go to, funding some of the equipment, et cetera. And I had to justify that, right? As anybody would have to do, whether you're an entrepreneur or not. When you deal with budgets, you have to lay out what the budget's for, what you're going to do with the money, and then, you know, usually you have to account for, did you do those things later on? And so that's what I would do each October. Starting with October 2001, the first year that I worked with Lowe's, I went up to North Wilkesboro. That's where their headquarters were at the time. And I would meet with Robert. That was the gentleman that was in charge of my project. And his assistant, her name was Robin. Yes, it's Robert and Robin, not making it up. And we would discuss things. So we started doing that in the fall of 01. And we just, you know, get the budget ready for 02. And each year we did the same thing. So eventually, I don't remember if it was 05, 06, somewhere around there, Lowe's built a new headquarters, a new facility down in Mooresville, and that's where they are today. And it was this modern, incredible office building in Mooresville. Very, very beautiful. I mean, glass, like an incredible campus. Not a campus, but an office building in Mooresville. So I went there in October, not long after I did this talk over at the United Space Alliance in Houston, to do the budgeting. And it was really cool because I'd go in, you get past security, check in, whatever. They call up to Robert. Okay, Robert will be down in a few minutes. You can wait over there. And it's this really nice, modern lobby area. And it was interesting because there's all these people waiting, and they've got like their own widget to sell to Lowe's. You know what I mean? Like the next great plumbing part. Something for electrical, you know, maybe a new LED light or whatever, right? They're bringing the latest invention of the best mousetrap ever built, you know, figuratively speaking here, to pitch to a buyer. And you could tell some of them were nervous. Their leg is bouncing up and down. They've got like, you know, large drawings and renderings and these canvas things that they're going to show on an easel maybe. Maybe they got a laptop and they're going to do a PowerPoint. They might have a case, and inside that case is samples of the widget that they're trying to get Lowe's to buy and give their company. Maybe they're a small mom and pop. They're trying to get into the market here, or a division of another company that's trying to branch out. Whatever the case may be, these people are looking for their big break. And I remember sitting there just looking around at all these nervous people. That some of them were on their cell phones, and back then they were flip phones, of course, a few bar phones. We didn't have iPhones yet. That was still almost a year away, believe it or not. We're getting there, but it was just really like, wow, these people are all hoping for the big break where they can call back home to their wives or, you know, some cases it was women doing the pitching, and they would tell their husbands, you know, look, I signed with Lowe's. They're going to buy 4,000 units of the widget and sell them at 15 stores, whatever. They were looking for their big break, and I already had mine. It was a little bit of a kind of a not arrogant feeling. That's not the right word. I wasn't arrogant, but I was confident. I was like, wow, you know, Lowe's came to me. In 2000, we talked about that in the first few episodes of this podcast series. If you recall, Lowe's came to me. They heard about me through other stuff that I had done, and they came to me. And yeah, I still had to do a budget and do a pitch, but they asked me to do that pitch. And, my product was hurricane awareness. I'm not selling a widget to them, so to speak. But you know what I mean? It was just this interesting, I'm waiting to go meet with Robert to talk about my budget for 07. These people are just looking to get their foot in the door. It was just a really fulfilling type feeling of like, I have arrived. I'm already here. I'm in the door. I've been in the door since 01. And it was just an interesting thing. I remember that feeling, thinking like, what would it be like to want that break? And yet I was already on the other side. I don't know how to describe that, but I remember that very well, very vividly. And then Robert came down. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Oh, good to see you again. Whatever. Want any coffee? Whatever. That's the standard thing people ask those days and these days, right? Anyway, we went up and we met in a conference room with Robert and Robin, all three of us. And we went over the budget and the plans and everything for 07. It would be about the same, about $85,000. And we would add quite a bit more hurricane fares around the country. It was kind of like this template that I had designed over the years. The Red Cross, a few vendors, storm shutter people, generator experts, you know, somebody from the Weather Service would come out, and maybe a grassroots effort relief organization in addition to the Red Cross, you know, whatever. It was like this template that we had designed together, and we would expand this into 50 cities, 50 locations around the country for 07. We're going to have a hurricane fair, the biggest one yet. Very, very ambitious. I wouldn't go to all 50 of them. I think I was going to go to 25, and Jesse would go to some, Mike would go to some, and I would do a bunch myself. And I think altogether we hit like 30 of them. That was the plan anyway for 07. So we talked about that and what I was going to do with these remaining wind towers that Lowe's had funded. Remember that? We had three. One of them got put into use in Mississippi at the Bay Waveland Middle School, but the other two I had in my possession because the one in Pascagoula, the weather station, was put on, again, like an old smokestack at the EOC in Pascagoula, and so we didn't need the wind tower. And then the third one for Harrison County, as I said in the last episode, I think it was, or maybe the prior one, somewhere recently, it was just hard. You know, it was harder to get people to agree, well, where can we put this? And we just lost, time got away from us, and the project kind of got sidetracked. And I was just going to hold on to them, and Lowe's was fine with that. You know, use them yourself. Put them out in the field. We've paid for it. We want the data, so sure, keep them. And so we talked about that. What would you do with those two wind towers and the weather stations that we purchased and so forth? We're talking several thousand dollars worth of equipment. And we agreed that I would hold on to it and develop a way to integrate this or these two wind towers into my field project for 07. And in addition, I thought, well, why don't we buy a trailer, like a full-on cargo trailer, an enclosed trailer. I think it was like 17 feet or something. It was a pretty big trailer. And that was going to be, I don't remember, $4,500 or something. And they agreed to that, and we talked everything over, and we had a good plan, and that was it. You know, I finished up the meeting and had a great vision and great plan ahead for 07. My contract would be renewed. They typically got that to me in January, and then their fiscal year begins February 1st, and I would get my first paycheck, if you will. Not just paycheck, but my first funding drop, which included my paycheck, to pay my bills and feed my family. I think it was like three or four times a year they would divide that 85 grand up and send it to me every few months, not all at once. That's just not a good idea. And that would start in February, and we were good to go. So that was it. 06 wrapped up on a good note. Things had moved along pretty good. I had three unmanned camera boxes ready to go. I had a kind of an agreement with CNN that if we ever had a big event, especially hurricanes, I'd work with CNN. might be some money involved. Weren't real sure. You know, they were, that was all kind of like, not sure how we're going to do that. But, you know, the exposure could be good for you. It's like, okay, sure, that'll work. We know how from Hurricane Rita that the exposure is a good thing. It leads to people wanting to sign up for our streaming service. So sure, that might work. You know, just things were moving along as I went into my seventh year working with Lowe's, you know, as a big partner. I still had a relationship with Sprint. And, you know, I thought, all right, 07, looking good. We're going to be all set. And a new year coming up. And I'm going to hit it hard with lots of stuff going on. And we'll be ready. You know, it was very positive, a very positive vibe going forward. Now, I'll say this before we sign off here of this episode. Remember that. Positive vibe ending 06 going into 07. Not so positive a year later. All right? And I'll leave you with that cliffhanger. Oh, yeah. Big dramatic changes are coming a year later. And you'll see. All right? So we'll get there. That's going to be in the next few episodes of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. We'll talk about 07. We'll have Jesse Bass back. We have a heck of a story to tell you about him and myself with Hurricane Noel. Never made landfall along the east coast of the U.S., but it certainly caused a lot of mayhem, and quite personally for Jesse. We'll get to that in an upcoming episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. All right? Hey, listen, it's always awesome that you tune in. I appreciate it. I love hearing from you, the feedback you give me, that you appreciate these episodes. I appreciate you listening to them, and I appreciate you supporting this entire project. And just remember, I emphasize this because I think it's important. This is not a podcast available outside of Patreon. It is on the Hurricane Track Insider site, but it's not on Google, it's not on Apple, it's not on Spotify, because this is yours. You know what I mean? This is one special gift that I can give you guys that support what I do, and that is these really intimate details of how this project has evolved over the years. And I just think it's awesome. So I just wanted to emphasize that again. I appreciate you tuning in and being a part of it. And it's a privilege here to be able to give you these details again, like we're all sitting around talking about it. What a wonderful thing. So thanks for being a part of it. And thanks for tuning in again. I am Mark Suddeth. Good to have you along. I'll be back with you with another episode next week.